We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The Score!
Pitching coach Tommy Hotovy of the Cubs wearing the blue pullover.
Tommy Hotovy, pitching coach for the Chicago Cubs.
You're transitioning from being a player to kind of getting into baseball. You take an online class, was it, at Boston U? Sabermetrics 101?
Yeah.
I was a finance major in college, and I had an economics minor. A lot of it was, too, I'm going to refresh all my econ knowledge, and I'm going to do it in a baseball course. It's like one of the best things ever.
There's just a lot of trust there with Tommy. We know he's such a hard worker. He puts in all the hours and really, really knows what he's talking about when it comes to pitching.
Tommy Hotovy, breaking down the starting rotation and bullpen on the north side with Mully and Hall.
I'm here for one reason. I want to help these guys get better, and we want to win baseball games.
Tommy Hotovy on 670 The Score. The Score.
Tommy. Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a pleasure to talk to the Cubs pitching coach, Tommy Hotovy, and of course brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Tommy.
I'm doing great, guys. Good morning. Good to hear you.
Yeah, you know, we're delighted to talk to you, and obviously Kyle Hendricks back on the bump today. We've been talking about Kyle. A couple of rough starts against Atlanta. They seem to have his number this year. Where is he at, and where are you at with him? How is the professor holding up?
Yeah, he's doing good. He's working his tail off, you know, in between these starts just to continue to improve and get better. And you know, look, like Atlanta's got a really good offense, They've got some disciplined veteran hitters in there that are, you know, kind of staggered around some really young, explosive, exciting talent. You know, it's a fun team to watch play just because of their approach and how they play the game. And they had a really good game plan against Kyle. I think he'd be the first one to say just didn't execute the way he wanted to execute. And when he got into a hole or got into trouble, they were kind of all over it, and we talked about last time just continuing, Kyle continuing to work on the mechanical stuff to get that right and honed in, and it's there. It's just, up until this point, still hadn't been consistent, to the way he wants it. And again, when Kyle's consistent, then the release point's the same every time. His starting lines on his sinker and the changeup are the same every time. And up to this point, just hadn't been there 100% of the time. So it's getting closer. He's obviously, putting in all the work and the mechanical work and the dry work in between starts to get there. Feeling good about where Kyle's going. Carl's his little nickname we call him. I don't know if anybody knows that, but that came from our bullpen coach. So it kind of comes out every once in a while.
Carl. Well, that needs to find that alter ego then, Tommy, because he sounded as lost in terms of confidence after last start as I think we've heard him in a long time, if ever. And I just wonder, you talk about the mechanical changes. How much do you have to worry about the psychological, building him up that way as well? The first inning has been such an issue. you wonder how his mindset is when he takes the mound. Even a guy as proven as Kyle Hendricks is, are those still things that you worry about because of the way that he has struggled?
No, I think, you know, more of the mental side just comes from frustration of it not being there yet, you know, at times, and not, he's such a big feel pitcher, wants to feel his delivery, feel these different points and feel the ball out front and be able to see the movement, all those things. And he, you know, it is frustrating when it's just not there 100% of the time. But, you know, that being said, he's a professional. He's as good as it gets when it comes to being able to handle adversity and understand that. And yeah, it does get frustrating, but you know, we're not going to pitch shutouts every night. Like there's going to be times, you know, we give up runs, and what we need to do as a group, we've discussed, is just limiting that damage, limiting those crooked numbers, keeping our offense in the game and giving them an ability to come back. And you know, the starters, they're grinding. They're grinding. And we, as a group, know that we got to do better as a whole on the starting side, being able to pitch deeper into games and giving our bullpen a chance to come in and have shorter outings and keep us in the game as long as possible. So, yeah, guys are working. You know, we're getting there. I'm looking forward to, yeah, good series here this week.
And we know Kyle is going in the first game. Who's pitching the second game?
Right now, still to be determined. We've discussed a few things where I haven't gotten to the ballpark yet this morning, so hopefully we'll have some more discussions this morning about it. We're still waiting to hear just on a few guys too. They're just a little banged up, and you know, that may influence kind of how we work things in the next few days. But yeah, hopefully Rossi will have his pregame, you know, Zoom this morning, and we'll have it figured out by then.
Adbert Alzolay has to be among the guys you consider for tonight, Tommy. If not, the next time out, he'll want to carry the momentum from the last start. What kind of strides did he make? And as you continue to give him a little bit more each start in terms of trusting him to go deeper, what has he shown you?
Just, I mean, his ability to spin that slider and move it around the strike zone. I mean, he always had, you know, that swervy breaking ball in the past, and the work he put in at the alt site last year to kind of learn more of that true slider, and then, you know, just continuing to want to improve that pitch and make it better, and things we worked on in spring training and things we talked about in sides, he feels like he could throw that pitch all around the strike zone, you know, back door to a lefty, back foot, chase to a righty, front door to a right. I mean, there's so many things. He feels like he can manipulate it, not only the movement, but the speed of it. And that's probably been the most impressive thing that I've seen. This guy learned this pitch, you know, less than a year ago, you know, and now it's one of the best pitches in the game right now, and just continues to get better and work and improve. And the other thing is just the fastball command. When mechanically, you know, we've always worked with him about just staying directed to the plate, having fastball command, being able to move the ball around where he wants. And now, you know, you pair both of those fastballs, the way he's moving them around the zone and getting strike one with them a lot of times, that just opens up this whole whole repertoire of different breaking and moving sliders and the changeup. And there's a lot of confidence there. It's fun to watch him pitch. It's explosive. It's real stuff. And, yeah, we expect him to keep rolling. And again, like, the thing people don't get to see about Appert just is his desire to want to be the best, and he continues to work hard every day, and yeah, he's really fun to work with.
You know, I'm not second guessing anything. I'm just curious, when Castellanos came up on Sunday with the guy on third, he already had four hits. Did you contemplate walking him, or, you know, obviously I think Joey Votto was next. I suppose you could walk two and try to get a force out. How do those discussions work, and what happens as you're in that moment? And I, you know, Tommy, I hate that man on second roll for extra innings, and I don't know what the solution is, but it drives me nuts.
Well, yeah, the only thing that comes from that is it's an unearned run for Greg, I guess, is the, you know, the way it's, unfortunately it's a loss, but yeah, you know, those moments, they happen fast, right? You know, you're it's runner on second, Castellanos, he's working the at-bat. Next thing you know, there's a ball, you know, a little cross up, and there's a ball get past Willie. Now he's on third. It's a 3-0 count. And, you know, those moments start speeding up quick, you know, I think for everybody. So we talked about trying to, you know, pitch around Nick. I got, you know, got 3-1, and I talked to Craig after, and he was trying to bounce that. I mean, you don't throw 3-1 curveballs, you know, usually trying to throw them for strikes. You know, he was trying to throw it to Chase and take advantage of that situation. It's one of those things you can play it a lot of different ways. If you think there's a high probability of a strikeout, you try to go for it in that situation. If you don't, then, yeah, you can walk two guys and load the bases and try to play for some force outs and play it that way. But, you know, we trust in those moments, obviously trust Craig and what he's done. And, yeah, in that moment, he just didn't get the curveball where he wanted it, you know, and Nick got a piece of it.
That was quite a series, Tommy. And I think that, you know, the tone was set is intense between the Cubs and the Reds always. You know, Amir Garrett has the big celebration after the strikeout. We saw what happened after that. Just curious, you know, from a pitching coach's perspective, these are high-leverage moments sometimes your pitchers find themselves in. Those strikeouts, you know, do you have a rule of thumb? Do you guys talk about, you know, what you should do after you have a moment or what you shouldn't do? Is there some sort of unwritten code that is accepted? And is this even a conversation that you have with your guys, especially the younger guys as they come into the league? Because you've got a range of – you know, you've got Kyle Hendricks, who shows no emotion. You've got Alzolay, who pretty much wears his emotions on his sleeves. What is the right way to react to striking out somebody with the bases loaded or a high-leverage situation like that?
That's a great question. You know, I think we talk about a lot about how to play with emotion, and we want to show emotion. We want guys to be themselves. We want guys to be competitive and have a fire about them and those things. You know, the thing we talk about a lot, though, is we do that for our teammates. We do that for ourselves and for our team. You know, we don't really try to push that or force that on the other team by celebrating and taunting them. It's, you know, we do that for our team and our teammates and for yourself. And yeah, emotions run high. And sometimes, you know, guys take offense to, you know, way guys act or celebrate or whatever they do. But, you know, in the end, you know, I think we just try to take the approach of, you know, we're doing this and we're celebrating for our team and our teammates. And if we keep that, you know, more on our side, then, you know, usually you're in a decent spot there.
You know, this is weird, but when we're talking, we see a pitcher struggle and we say things like, oh, they should skip a start, you know, put him in the pitch lab and fix him, as if that's like a place where you go and you do various experiments. Is that just insane talk when you see a guy struggle, or is that something that you've contemplated?
No, there's definitely reasons to merit that thought. I think a lot of times, especially if a guy's dealing with like a nagging injury that is, you know, it's not keeping him from pitching, but maybe it's keeping him from performing at his best. You know, we always talk about, you know, being able to try to work through things. The other thing is this too, like there's never a timeline on like when guys right the ship. Sometimes it just clicks in an inning, you know? So as long as the work they're doing, you know, between starts is heading in the right direction, they're hitting those checkpoints and things we want to work on, and it looks good visually, then I think you keep rolling because you know, good stuff around the corner. But there are times where you get into that side work in between starts and things are just still not clicking, or it's, you know, it's a long side because we're grinding through a lot of the mechanical work and things like that. You know, maybe you'll make those decisions to do that, but you know, there's definitely ways to be able to be creative and give guys the rest they need. A lot of times too, when you're struggling, sometimes just that mental break of saying like, okay, I may not be making my next start. Let's reset. I'll start in X amount of days and we'll be ready to go for that point.
You know, Tommy, Trevor Williams, some starts looks like he's unhittable and he's really cruising along and he looks like the guy you need him to be, and everything's working. And then other starts, he seems to struggle with consistency and location and command. Obviously, that's not exactly makes him unique to other pitchers trying to find their way early in the season. But when, you know, how would you describe the challenge in getting him ready start to start and the consistency that has somewhat eluded him, even though when he has been good, he has been very good?
Yeah, absolutely. I we talk so much just about fastball command and being able to hone in your number one fastball every game, and then everything else works off of that. I think last start for Trevor, it's the one of the first times we just didn't see him command his four-seam fastball the way that we had seen, you know, to this point. And it's fine to have a game plan to be able to move the ball around and mix in more breaking balls or the changeup and you know, kind of keep hitters off balance. But if your fastball's not in, you know, in line, if you're not locked in on your location, on your heater, then it's really hard to expect and trust all the off-speed stuff to be there as well. And, you know, with Trevor, he's got such a unique four-seamer. It's so unique. It's a pitch that, you know, that's kind of been his bread and butter pitch, you know, the majority of his career. So we work off that pitch. But once that is locked in, then he's been able to utilize and open up his repertoire. And I think, you know, some of the games, if you go back and look, some of the really good games he's pitched, it's been a very even distribution of pitch usage. That's great, like I said, but those games he also commanded his four-seam really well early in the game and established that he was going to have that pitch and attack, and that definitely opens up all the other pitches he has at his disposal.
You know, and I mean, it's such an obvious thing as we talk about command and not walking guys, and that's how – you get guys to last longer, and that's how you pump up innings pitched, et cetera. It's, you know, it's so frustrating sometimes when you watch guys having to come out of the game early because they're hitting, you know, pitch totals that determine that they got to come out, when the reality is that you needed another inning and a couple more outs.
Yeah, I mean, our guys, you know, want to be out there as long as possible every single day. They also understand that, you know, there's going to be innings they're going to have to grind through. There's going to be 25, 30 pitch innings at times. It's how you can right the ship from those moments and then be able to carry your team two or three or four more innings after that, that are the ones that can make or break, you know, a week worth of games for us. You know, I think the one thing that stands out probably more than anything, and we've discussed, is just as a group, just the lack of first pitch strikes, or at least the lack of quality strikes early in the count. A lot of that comes from not trusting, you know, the mechanical part of it, not trusting the lines and the fastball at times. And I feel like, you know, and also a product of facing some really aggressive lineups over the last, you know, week with the Braves and the Reds. So something we're focused on, we're going to get back to attacking the strike zone, especially early in the count. Working ahead. I mean, those are like the old adage things that you talk about in pitching, working ahead, getting strike one, being in more aggressive counts. Usually when you're in a 0-1 or a 1-2 count, good things are going to happen. So we're going to try to, right, you know, really focus on that, get guys back attacking the strike zone.
Tommy, thanks a ton. Great catching up with you. Have a great day.
Good luck today.
Guys, appreciate it. Thank you. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks, Tommy.
That is Tommy Hotovy, the Cubs pitching coach, and they've got a doubleheader today, and I guess the weather's okay. I mean, Dustin thought it was raining coming in, but it's okay. And big news on the score, Steve Stone will be on at 9:40, so make sure you are locked in and paying attention. Stoney can help us understand what's going on the south side with a couple of these injuries, and certainly – you know, bears repeating what he said about losing 65 to 70 home runs with Aloy and now Louis Robert gone for months. We'll talk about it next. 312-644-6767. Do you want to see them make a trade? Do you want to see them make a deal, or do you want to see them hold off and get to that trade deadline? It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Now that you've got two of these holes in the outfield, does that urgency level change for you guys?
Well, I do think that the performances of Yermin and Andrew have helped mitigate some of, as you described, the urgency to replace the vacancy created by Aloy. Look, it's the nature of how we're all wired here. It's just there's always this inclination to try to fix it, to solve the problem, to find the right answer outside if you don't feel like you have it internally. So that's going to continue to gnaw at all of us who are charged with trying to put the best roster we possibly can out there. In the end, like I said, initially, we're going to start with this, some of the internal solutions or some internal options that we have here as we continue to evaluate what else potentially could be available to us. It's still early in this season. It's not exactly the time where you see potentially impactful players changing teams, but that doesn't mean we aren't going to at least explore what is potentially out there and evaluate it.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is Rick Hahn, and he's talking about how to go about figuring out what to do with the White Sox. Now, we know that there are various other options that could become available, that maybe are available. Brian Goodwin, I believe, left-handed hitter, center fielder, cut by Pittsburgh. Now, that's a guy that isn't that far removed from, you know, being a decent player, but I don't know that he solves anything. It's just I'm just talking about guys that could be available. Yeah. I mean, obviously, somebody that's played the position before that you might want to, you know, lean on a little bit. I'm talking about center fielders. I don't know, David. It's depressing. Well,
yeah, it is. It's a downer. Yeah. Rick Hahn has got to wonder, boy, what did he do to deserve this? First Aloy and now Luis Robert. And you don't expect on May 4th to having to scour teams' rosters for a veteran center fielder who may or may not be available or an outfielder that could help you now immediately. And yet I think he owes it to that's due diligence at this point. You know, Bruce mentioned Starling Marte. He mentioned Charlie Blackmon. Both guys are intriguing to some degree, I think, for different reasons. Charlie Blackmon would be very expensive. There would be a commitment there through next season.
Right.
That would be a money equation. I don't think you'd have to give up as much in terms of prospects, Mully. Other trades may involve you parting with guys in your organization, and I don't know how willing or how willing the Sox should be to go that direction. Lot of decisions, tough ones to make for Rick Hahn moving forward.
But don't you agree that given the expectations of this team, that they need to be aggressive, that they really need to do something that that would speak to this urgency to win? It's time to win. They're in win time, and they've been set back by – well, I guess three injuries now, right? Because Adam Engel isn't coming back anytime soon, and Adam Engel was your fourth outfielder, so that hurts. But you would think that given the fact that they have been able to kind of coast through the Aloy injury, and I don't necessarily mean coast, but they're not far. They're what, four games ahead of the Twins,
and they could
catch up with the Kansas City this weekend. I just think that there has to be this kind of push to solve something in order to keep what they have going.
I think you're absolutely right. And you can use the word coast if you like, because if you look at the offensive categories in the American League, the White Sox, you'll find at the top of several big ones. And that means they're finding a way. They were finding a way to score runs without Aloy Jimenez. And Luis Robert, it challenges that because of the speed. And he was starting to hit, and he was starting to get it more at the plate. But you still have an outstanding starting pitching staff. You still have an outstanding bullpen. And, Mully, to answer the question directly, you are now – nothing has changed about the urgency of the situation except for your resources that you have available. And injuries, you know, it's not fair, but it happens. And you have a 76-year-old manager that has to win now, that screams win now, that if he's here for one reason, it is to win now. So you do have to be aggressive if you're Rick Hahn. I think that's the mandate that he woke up with this morning, because it may not be something ideal in terms of parting with prospects and young players and these kind of things, but you have to consider all of those options because of where you find yourself.
312-644-6767 is the number. Is this a tipping point? You know, they absorbed the Aloy injury, and they got an unexpected start from Yermin Mercedes, and Andrew Vaughn suddenly learned to play a different position, and it's been okay. Is this, though, the tipping point? Is this the one that you don't come back from? Have you reached there yet? You still have, as you say, David, you got great pitching. You're supposed to have the best bullpen in baseball. Your pitching should be wonderful. Are you good enough defensively? Not to this point.
No.
Can you trim out those little league mistakes? Where are you at with the, you know, there's a couple of guys that really have to pick you up here. Yasmani Grandal is paid a lot of money. He needs to do it. He needs to pick up things and really be an asset for this team. Ditto Abreu. I mean, I got tons of time for Jose Abreu. I know he's off to a slow start. I think that will end. But if ever it was time for that to end, it's right now. That's where your offense has to help you immediately, those two guys. But I think that everybody has to do a little bit more, and everybody has to play as well as they can, and they're going to have to figure out a way to make up some of these runs they lose by the home runs going missing.
You've got 135 games to go. You've played 16% of your season, and you still have Tim Anderson, Jose Abreu, Yasmani Grandal, and Yoan Moncada in your lineup, not to mention Adam Eaton, who's off to a pretty good start offensively. And so there are a lot of reasons you can point to and think that the offense is going to be okay, to the point where they'll score enough runs with the pitching staff that you have. Now, you've got to protect yourself against all of those concerns and against everything that else that might happen moving forward, because this seems like it might be one of those seasons where there's going to be something else that happens. So if you're Rick Hahn, you explore the veteran market, you look at what teams are asking for, because they're going to try to get as much out of you as possible now, because they know you're feeling a sense of desperation, perhaps, that maybe, you know, you understand, but I don't know if you have to overreact right now. So you find out if and ordinarily in most seasons you'd start talking maybe beginning of June about potential trades. You move it up a month because you have to, and you're the White Sox, and you still are thinking that all your goals that you set out to accomplish are still in play, even though they seem a little bit harder to achieve maybe, but they're still in play.
What is amusing to me, and when I say amusing, I probably should say bemusing, but what stands out in my mind, just from my friends who are Sox fans and just from our exchanges, this Louis Robert injury has brought back the horrors of Aloy's injury that may have been forgotten or put in a different place or somehow not at the forefront of consciousness as you watch this team. I don't think people are, I don't think fans are sitting there like, oh God, we'd have won that game if Aloy was up. Whoa, what happened there? We missed Aloy's homer in that spot. I think that it's been on the back burner, and I think it's out of sight, out of mind, and you hope for the best, and maybe he can come back, and it's in your consciousness, but not in the forefront of it. But now Louis Robert gets hurt, and the first thing I hear from my friends is, how can this happen after you lose Aloy? We've lost two-thirds of the outfield. It's no longer one injury. It's somehow become two injuries. Is that a strange comment?
Well,
I'm telling you, just the people I talk to. It's brought back the Aloy hell, as if for the first time, as if we just realized it.
You had happily repressed that memory, and I think that it's understandable why you'd have some of this trauma after seeing Luis Robert go down and hearing the prognosis of, you know, 12 to 16 weeks, and I think it was couched that way, Mully, so it didn't remind people of the Aloy prognosis of 4 to 5 months, because it's kind of the same thing. You're kind of looking at August, end of August, September, Labor Day, before you realistically can start to think and wonder are they going to help the White Sox this season? That's such a long time away, so you have to think in the now. And in the now, you lean on your pitching. You lean on your offense to manufacture runs, and you lean on your bullpen. And that's why I would think that as Rick Hahn considers moves, I wouldn't touch the rotation. I think I heard some conversations yesterday. Maybe it was just immediate reaction, but I wouldn't trade anybody in my starting rotation or even offer them as a means of trying to get through this hurdle. The best way to get over this obstacle is to lean on these pitchers like Rodon, like Dylan Cease, and hope that they take that next step. So pitching becomes the biggest strength, and even bigger strength than it is now.
Who's talking about trading pitching? Line them up. I want to talk to them. That's crazy. You leave that alone.
Yeah,
we don't have enough issues.
I mean, you leave it alone.
You know, I told you, at some point, Dallas Keuchel's back is going to be a concern. I worry about Carlos Rodon when you get to a certain number of innings. I worry about where you're at with Dylan Cease, with the up and down. And the other thing, I told you, I spoke to a buddy of mine who's a football guy. He knows I'm a Sox fan. He heard about the injury, and he said something along the lines of, is that the same thing that Bo Jackson had? And that's when I just, like, that's when I started to, you know, breaking things in the house. Like,
No,
it's a totally different injury.
What's he trying to do to you?
But, I mean, you know, that's the thing. I think it's the Aloy injury was so bizarre. You know, I mean, it was just like, how do you get that injury playing baseball? It was just a bizarre injury. And that has given us all kind of a little pause. But when he's running, he's legging out an infield single, and all of a sudden his hip flexor pops. I mean, I've never heard of that. Is that a common thing that happens when you sprint, when you're like this elite athlete that can run around center field with the best of them and cover ground like no one's ever seen?
It just made me think of sprinters whose bodies are so tightly wound and muscular and just athletic that they hit the wrong spot the wrong way, and they land differently or awkwardly, and then boom. You know, it's just like – and he went down. Is that, and you knew immediately it was something serious just based on his reaction and the pain that he was in, and that's why it just was like, oh, no. All right, because with Aloy, you knew it was bad, but it was such an awkward thing. It wasn't an athletic move, and he had a history of getting injured in some unusual situations. But Luis Robert, you looked at his body, you looked at his athleticism, and you thought maybe this wasn't going to be something he was prone to. But here we are talking about two-thirds of the outfield having to be replaced with Adam Engel, you know, still kind of missing. 815 wants to know, Molly, how about signing Puig or Cespedes?
Okay, yes. Bring them both in. I got no problem with it. And bring up Cespedes' brother. And where the hell
you can
is
find him.
Colas?
Yeah. He's on his way to Birmingham.
Bring in the guy from Japan. Let's do it all. And get the guy from Colorado and go ahead and trade with the Mets. I mean, whatever it takes. Let's just do it all. Throw numbers.
Takes a village.
Let's go. Yeah. All right. We got Mike Florio next. We can talk about quarterback misery around the quarterback unhappiness around the NFC North. Can't wait to talk to Mike. Mully and Hall on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station. FootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day, day by day, we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We
get
beat.
NFL Insider, Mike Florio.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We love talking to Mike Florio. And, of course, this segment brought to you by Alpamonte Nissan, Alpamonte Nissan. In Melrose Park on North Avenue or apnissan.com. Michael, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Mike.
Doing great. How are you guys today?
Oh, we're all fired up. You know, it is a fact of my life that I am a lifelong Manchester United fan. And when I tuned in to see them play their most hated rivals, Liverpool, I couldn't believe that they had the fans had had a terrible thing outside, a big riot. It was like it was back to the real kind of old days of hooliganism. The way that the place looked, Old Trafford all beaten up, and they had to cancel the match. And boy, people are mad at the Glazers over there. I don't know that many in Tampa are mad at them, but they are as hated an ownership group as we've seen. And there's a lot of ownership groups that people are mad about over the Super League.
It's amazing to see the mobilization of the Manchester United fans. I don't know that we would ever witness anything like that in U.S. sports. The closest thing I can remember is the Millen Man March that Lions fans had in 2005 to try to get Matt Millen fired as the GM, and it was like 500 to 1,000 people. I mean, this was real. This was next level. This was an invasion of the stadium, an invasion of the pitch. I saw images of a police officer who had stitches on his face. I mean, it was over the top, and reportedly more demonstrations like this are planned. And it's stunning to me how docile and accepting American sports fans are in contrast. And I'm not saying that when your team chronically stinks, you should invade the stadium and have a demonstration that teeters toward violence and danger. But it just makes me wonder how closely everyone is watching this to see whether or not it ever would become an American problem and what the NFL or other sports leagues would do about it if it ever boiled over that way. That's what I think is fascinating. Jed York, the owner of the 49ers, said a few years ago, you can't fire the owner. Well, maybe you can't, but you can try to force him to quit, and that's what the folks in Manchester are doing aggressively. And it makes it, I think, something that any sports fan in America needs to be paying attention to.
Well, Mike, folks here in Chicago have this sort of odd feelings of hope surrounding the Bears and praise for Ryan Pace after the latest draft. Justin Fields, Tevin Jenkins, what was your level of surprise seeing the bold moves the Bears made to move up to get their guys?
Well, I was surprised that ownership signed off on what amounts to, I hope, a commitment to Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy for at least two more years. I would like to think they're not on the hot seat when they've given up next year's first-round pick, when they're all in with Justin Fields, and if you get a new regime in there, the new regime may say, we don't like Justin Fields. He's got a screwed-up arm motion, and we never would have taken him in that spot. We have a different idea of what we're going to do at quarterback. So now that you have Justin Fields, you need some continuity to let him reach his ceiling. And I think this is all part of an effort, an all-in move by Ryan Pace to get fans to quit talking about Patrick Mahomes. The only way you're going to make that happen is to get your own Patrick Mahomes. So they need this guy to be great, they need him to be special, and they need him to make fans forget about the guy who is 7 hours away by car that is too close for comfort, for Pace, for Nagy. I mean, you know, he's just stuck with the aftermath. It's not like he had anything to do with it, but I think that's what they're trying to get past. And I admire the resolve to do it. If they believe in Justin Fields, go do it. And I respect the fact that ownership let them, assuming that ownership will now move them away from the hot seat and let this play out so we all can see what Justin Fields is capable of becoming.
You know, they cut Charles Leno Jr. yesterday, $9 million in cap savings because it's going to count after June 1, but they did release him, and that gives them some relief. They were abutting the cap. But it also makes you wonder, you know, Tevin Jenkins, I guess, is he the left tackle? Are they going to go try to sign someone? Do they have anyone to kind of play that position? And if they don't have tackles, does that mean Fields gets on the field quicker because he's the guy with mobility and 4.4 speed? How does Andy Dalton attempt to play without tackles?
Well, I'd be stunned if Andy Dalton is the quarterback week one. Back when they drafted Trubisky, Mike Glennon was the starter. They told him he's the starter. He was signed to be the starter, and I think he made it four games before Trubisky took over. I look at it this way. If you're going to make this move under these circumstances, especially 4 years post whiffing on Mahomes, if Justin Fields can't beat out Andy Dalton, what the hell were you doing taking him? And that would be the first indictment of this move if he can't win a head-to-head quarterback competition with Andy Dalton. So hopefully, for the Bears' sake, it won't be Andy Dalton week one. It will be Justin Fields because – and I think teams do this as a way to help young quarterbacks build confidence and also remove from the locker room the sense that the young guy's having something handed to him. You put him at the bottom of the depth chart and you force him to climb it. And in doing so, he builds some confidence, and in doing so, he wins over teammates who see, well, now I know why they made this guy a first-round pick. So I don't believe it's going to be Dalton week one, and if it is, that tells me there's an issue with the development of Justin Fields.
Yeah, I think that's a debate we can. That's going to be ongoing. I don't necessarily agree, but I want to get your thoughts on what's going on in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers and him liking Devontae Adams' tweet and all that stuff. But, you know, the threats, the reports, where is this headed, Mike, and how bad has it gotten?
I personally think that Aaron Rodgers spent 3 months after the season ended working behind the scenes to tell the Packers what he was going to do if they don't give him what he wants by the time the draft begins. And I think they called his bluff, and they found out he wasn't bluffing because the cascade of reports came, starting with the news the 49ers had called the Packers about a possible trade. I think the 49ers were manipulated into making that phone call. I think somebody put a bug in the 49ers' ear that it was worth their while to try to get Aaron Rodgers. They wouldn't have made that call. Then they make that call. Then Rodgers' camp leaks it. And then it's one after another, and he's serving his revenge more frozen than tundra 1 year exactly after the day that they traded up to get Jordan Love and caused this problem. So I think now the Packers continue to call his bluff because I think at the core is the fan base. And the Packers believe that Aaron Rodgers is not going to alienate the fan base, even though I'm picking up some anecdotal evidence that some are turning against him. Some of the Packers fans who send me hostile and insulting emails are starting to change their tone toward me and starting to acknowledge, you know what, maybe you've been right about this guy. So I don't know that Rodgers can pull this off without becoming a pariah. I think that's what the Packers believe he won't do. But I also think the Packers believed he wouldn't do what he did last week. So now we just wait. It's great drama. Get your popcorn ready. The Packers' old school attitude, you're an employee, you just work here. And Aaron Rodgers trying to have the new school, hey, quarterbacks run this league approach. Something's got to give. And I don't know how he turns tail and goes back to the team unless he makes it, I'm doing it for the fans, I'm doing it for my teammates, I'm doing it for my coaches, screw the front office. And he tries each week this year to get more and more fan support behind him, and then next year is when he makes his big push to get out. But I still can't imagine, with everything that's happened, that he's going to play for the Packers again. Maybe he will, but it just seems like that bridge has been burned, and now we just figure out if and when he gets traded.
Great stuff, Mike. As always, appreciate your time.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, guys.
That is Mike Florio. I mean, I got to tell you, is it wrong that I just find this just like, I mean, as horrible as I find everything going on with the White Sox, this just delights me for some reason. I don't know why. I mean, is it resentful jealousness that I feel?
Yeah, maybe it's a little, you got a little RG3 in you. Maybe that's part of it. You
okay.
Kind of like,
right.
No, but, yeah. But I think it's natural. No, what it is that, you know, it's unnecessary. So it is kind of amusing. This is a created situation. It doesn't have to be like this. And you just wonder how far Aaron Rodgers is going to push it and how bad he's going to make it, because I think it's on him to solve it.
Oh, it's glorious. All right, we're going to talk to Dan and Layla next. Molly and Haw.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.